Hi, my name is Tobias Haberkorn, and you're listening to Airlift from Berlin Review. By now you will have heard that Viktor Orbán, Hungary's far-right prime minister, lost the election on Sunday. Orbán spent 16 years turning Hungary into what he himself called an illiberal state. He hollowed out the courts, controlled the press, placed loyalists inside public institutions, and became a model and inspiration in other far-right movements. Trump admired him, Putin backed him, and J.D. Vance even flew to Budapest to campaign for Orbán in the weeks before the election. On Sunday, Orbán was defeated by Péter Magyar and his TISA party, which won in a landslide with 54% of the popular vote and a two-thirds majority in parliament. They were celebrating in the streets. Many Hungarians thought that this day would never come. But all the quasi-autocratic infrastructure that Orbán built is still standing, and how and whether it can be undone is an open question. To understand what this victory actually means and what comes next for Hungary and for democracies in a global context, I spoke with Zoltán Ádám, a political economist in Budapest, who correctly predicted Magyar's win in his most recent essay for Berlin Review. Zoltán has spent his career studying how liberal democracies erode and whether they recover. He experienced the Orbán system not only as a political analyst, but also personally. In 2023, he lost his academic position at Corvinus University Budapest, one of Hungary's top institutions, after refusing to pass a student whose family had close ties to the Orbán government. The dispute that followed, with the university's board stacked with Orbán loyalists, was a small version of the story Zoltán has been writing about for years. I spoke with Zoltán from Budapest, where he watched the election unfold before going out into the streets. Enjoy the show.
So I was in a private party with friends, and before that and after that, we went out to the streets and, smelled the atmosphere in the city. And generally, we were, of course, very happy, enthusiastic about the results, as many people in this city were. We are hopeful.
Okay, great. So maybe even a sense of liberation and some wind of change is hopefully happening.
I hope so.
So you explain in your piece the importance of in the Hungarian political system of the parliament. It's a one-chamber unicameral parliament and a two-thirds majority that Viktor Orbán has enjoyed for most of his reign as prime minister gives the governing party, Fidesz in the past and now the Tisza party, a lot of power actually to shape the country and even to rewrite the constitution. So what do you expect Péter Magyar's Tisza party to do as first steps in their new government with this overwhelming majority?
Yeah, so it's important that as it is now, it seems that TISA has received a two-third constitutional majority. So there's a very important threshold. You can have a simple majority in parliament with which you can govern, at least theoretically you can govern, but actually many of the institutional rules are so-called two-third rules, and to adjust them or to replace the heads of important government agencies or the members of the constitutional court or the head of the media authority or the chief prosecutor or the president of the republic, all these require two-thirds majority of parliament. This is you're very correctly said that this is a unicameral system. And within that, the two-third majority of this parliament, this house, the single house, can basically change anything. So Magyar last night in his victory speech announced that he expects all the heads of these key government agencies to resign, including the president of the republic, which is sort of a tricky situation because the president of the republic is the person who needs to call the new parliament. So the constitutional rule is that within 30 days, the president of the republic invites newly elected members of parliament to form the new parliament. But it seems that Magyar thinks that after that, after he has done that, President of the Republic, Tamás Súlyog, should resign along with a number of other key government agents or heads of agencies.
Peter Magyar was a member of the Fidesz Party, even a leading figure or part of the leadership of the Fidesz Party for most of Viktor Orbán's reign. And he joined or he formed this new opposition party just a few years ago. So he's very much a contender from within in a certain way. And in your Berlin Review piece, you also describe how the Tisza Party is not really a party in the classical sense of the term, with local chapters and a sort of like internal hierarchy. It's a very shallow, flat movement of people, actually, not actually constituted as a party. So who are the people that Magyar is going to rely on now? If all these important state roles that you mention, head of the media authority, general attorney, even the president of the republic, who are all Fidesz figures, if they all resign, who is Magyar likely going to replace them by? And is there going to be more continuity maybe in the personnel that he appoints that the election result might make it out to be? What do you think about that?
Okay, so first of all, Magyar was not a politician in the Fidesz era. He was part of the Fidesz establishment, let's put it this way. So he was actually the husband of a key Fidesz politician, former Minister of Justice Judith Varga, who was a rising star, a rising young foreign language speaking female star in the Fidesz leadership as a politician. And Magyar was her husband. Magyar never fulfilled any government position in a political sense, but he was on the board of state-owned companies, and he was in this inner circle of Fidesz, let's put it this way. And back in 2024, after his by then ex-wife, Judith Varga, is forced to resign amidst a scandal, a major high-profile political scandal, in February 2024, Magyar launches himself as a political figure, and soon he establishes his own political movement, which is named Tisza Party from April 2024. It's a small party. It's a party of a few dozen people, probably not more than about 30, 40 persons who are actually making political decisions. And there is a broad movement around the party. The so-called Tisza Islands are the local chapters of the movement, but members of this movement do not have membership right in the party. So in that sense, the members of the movement cannot hold responsible or accountable Magyar and his co-political leaders within the party. So there are no internal democratic mechanisms through which movement members can, you know, elect Magyar or approve his government or whatsoever. In that sense, Tisza is not a traditional party. It's rather a very little party surrounded by a broad movement. Whom he would rely on officials within the new administration, I wouldn't be too much concerned about that. And I don't think that he would reappoint old Fidesz faces. I think it would be politically very irrational, and I think he doesn't need to do that. I think he wants to communicate a clear break with the Fidesz era, and will probably appoint credible new leaders who can send a message of this is a new era, and there's a break from this kind of semi-autocratic, electoral autocracy type government that has been in power in the past 16 years.
Viktor Orbán has not only had his 16 years in continuous government since 2010, he also was the prime minister briefly from 1998 to 2002 for one parliamentary period. So he has the experience of having been head of government and then voted down. Yep. Do you think he's actually going to join the opposition and try to come back to power in the next election cycle?
So what I would say, first of all, to the credit of Viktor Orban, is I think it was super important. So last night, around 9:30, when official results were not yet published, but obviously they already knew the result, Orban went to the stage of his party's, Fidesz's, campaign closing event and announced it very openly and in a straightforward way that they have lost the election. He conceded and he said that he has congratulated Magyar on their victory. And I think it was a super important moment because actually many people in Hungary and outside Hungary perhaps as well were sort of concerned whether Fidesz would concede or not, would try to question the legitimacy of the result. There were lots of concerns with the potential Russian or whatever interference. And of course, we know about January 6th in the United States in 2020. So 2021. So we had reasons to be concerned, and those concerns turned out to be unfounded, at least so far. And I think this is super important. Orban is a very skillful politician, and he indeed, as you said, has experience in reorganizing themselves in opposition. And yeah, I think we can expect him to do so, although it's not sure that he is going to be at the helm, so to speak, of Fidesz. So although he's a relatively young person still, so he's about 64 years old, I believe, or something between 60 and 70, but around 65, very easily he can be active politically at least for 10 more years. However, he has been leading Fidesz essentially for 37 years. He was already the Fidesz leader essentially back in 1989. So he might not want to do that. I think he will be there. He will be around, but there might be another Fidesz leader taking over this role.
Viktor Orban conceded, but he still has to hand over power formally. What do you expect to happen in this intervening period?
I think the Hungarian constitutional system and the legal situation is not absolutely clear about when a new parliament is being formed, and until it is formed, what the government, which is still in place and led by Orban, can do. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's an interesting question, also in a sort of a German context, because I think it's not necessarily completely excluded that the old parliament tries to legislate something now. It's not very likely. Okay. It's not very likely. Uh-huh. But there is this very, very fearsome precedent from Germany from last year when the Bundestag, which is an outgoing Bundestag, changes the constitution.
Yeah.
Which is a very powerful precedent. Yeah. So if the outgoing Hungarian parliament makes some important changes, they will refer to that case. Not to give them any tips or ideas. That's not my intention.
Yeah, but you're right in pointing out a risk. In any case, the critical point of democracies is always transition of power. What happens in this gray zone between an old government and a new one, and to what extent is the old government going to use its discretion or constitutional powers? Orban had become a symbol of the international far right, and to a certain extent also a model for other far right and authoritarian movements, the MAGA movement. It was not by coincidence that J.D. Vance came to Budapest shortly before the election to support Orban, and Trump spoke out for him. And we also know about the reporting of Putin's support or even attempts to interfere in the election campaign. And Orban himself actually called his system an illiberal state affirmatively. And it's interesting to see that Magyar, apparently, the biggest shifts that he announced last night really concern Hungary's international role. He emphasized that Hungary would take different stances within the European Union. Do you share that view? Do you think that Magyar is really going to change Hungary's role internationally?
Yeah, of course, I hope so. But I'd also believe that he will do that, because that's just politically rational. And I also think that he genuinely believes that he should do that. So I have no question about his Western-minded commitment and orientation towards Hungary.
Would you also agree that this was a determining factor in his popularity and in his win with the electorate?
Yeah. Okay. So if you don't mind, I just step back a little bit to this electoral autocracy story, because I think that's very important to understand his importance from the point of view of the global movements towards sort of right-wing populist authoritarianism. Yeah. So Orbán created a political system in which, as he himself called it, illiberal state. A state was operating on an illiberal basis in the sense that majoritarian legitimacy was used to constrain checks and balances and the independence of any government agency, the independence of anybody from the government in the country based on a majoritarian political support the government received on a regular basis, on a regular four-year intervals at elections. In that sense, in this majoritarian sense, the Orbán has always been democratic, if you want. He did receive a majority support, but he was not liberal democratic, so democratic in the European sense, if you want, or the sense we use democratic as an adjective in the European Union, in which any government has limited power, limited by rules and checks in the institutional system. Orbán basically removed those checks. Popular legitimacy was there, I would use this term.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, this kind of majoritarian conduct of power can be very tiresome and can be very threatening and very, very ugly at times. So Fidesz was not very much constrained itself with threatening whoever was identified as a opposition persons, opposition parties, opposition regions, opposition cities, opposition groups of people, including, teachers, unions, businesses, or the European Union, for that matter. The two-third machine was operating throughout these 16 years. And some important element of the operation of the two-third machine was claiming sovereignty. Claiming a sovereignty which Hungary had not enjoyed before 2010, the argument went because after 1990 and before 2010, Hungary was sort of submissive to the European Union or the West in more general terms and did not stand sufficiently to its own national interests. And as opposed to that, Hungary after 2010 was sort of liberated by the new era, the system of national cooperation, as they called it. Of course, I do not agree with that. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But this was the political argument. And this sovereigntist kind of nationalistic sovereigntist argument was claiming the representation of national interest against, from time to time, the European Union. And Putin's Russia and Trump's America were associated as allies in this freedom fight against the liberal European Union. Now, when the system became increasingly unpopular, and in the first place, I would say it became increasingly unpopular on economic grounds, so I would emphasize the importance of deteriorating economic conditions, not dramatically deteriorating, but clearly, basically between 2023 and 2025, there is no economic growth. Back in 2023, there's a recession with an inflationary hike and a drop in real wages. So the meat of the Orbán regime providing increasing welfare for the majority of Hungarians is gone. And then there's this major political scandal back in 2024. And clearly there's a political vacuum. The old opposition parties cannot fill this vacuum. The new party is needed electorally. It's demanded, and Magyar fulfills the vacuum and creates his party. And his affiliation, his commitment towards re-anchoring Hungary in the West is obviously part of that, associated with a promise of, you know, returning to the West also means returning to a more prosperous, more hopeful, and more rationally envisaged development path for the country.
Okay, so you think that Hungary's role within these supranational frameworks like the European Union might really change. But then how do we approach the internal situation? Because this is, of course, a big concern for Hungarians and for many of the voters who voted against Orbán. Orbán has walked back minority rights. His anti-LGBTQ stance was very, very important with legislation that he passed in 2021 and as recently as last year. He has a grip, and you know your own personal story about this, also on universities, for example. So this entire domestic Orbanism system, how much of this do you think is likely to change? Or is Magyar, on the contrary, just continuing in a sort of like less extreme, but still very, very conservative and right-wing domestic approach? What do you think?
I think I need to be very cautious. And I don't want to be pessimistic. Yesterday's result can give reason to be more optimistic than I was in my piece, having a very strong two-third mandate, institutionally speaking. The country is divided, but Tisza received about 54% of the national vote, which is a massive majority, and it seems to be receiving a number of parliamentary seats well above the two-third threshold. So it's very strong politically and institutionally speaking. And I think Magyar at this stage can sort of afford to be more Western-oriented and more liberal than he was during the campaign. So during the campaign, he was super cautious, and the way he organized his party was also about potentially making compromises with Fidesz voters and perhaps even interest groups around Fidesz if it's needed. Because it was not that clear how much strength he can gather. And politically, he was also aiming at the political center ground in Hungary. And the political central ground in Hungary in the past 16 years has clearly, actually in the past 18 years, I would say, maybe 20 years after 2006, has clearly shifted to the right. So you need to understand that back in 2010, when Fidesz first formed this two-third majority, Fidesz received 53% of the vote. But next to that 53%, there was a 17% far-right party also present in parliament. So back in 2010, 70% of Hungarians voted for the right and the far-right. So what I'm trying to say is that this country in the past 16 years politically has shifted to the right.
Yes.
And I guess, we don't know exactly, but it's probably on the way towards back to the sort of a political center. But this political center is not exactly the political center as it was before 2010. I think one needs to recognize that. So I think Tisza and Magyar himself wants to navigate the country back towards a more liberal, democratic, EU-based consensus, but it's not clear to what extent and on what timing and in which time frame it's possible. And I think they will try.
Yeah.
Sometimes they will fail, sometimes they will succeed, but definitely the country will be operating on a basis of a Western alliance, primarily with the European Union, and meanwhile, obviously, trying to keep reasonably good relations to the US as well.
And the mechanisms that allowed Orbán to build his quasi or semi-autocratic rule are still there, of course. And within the system that Orbán created, which is extremely majoritarian, Peter Magyar now has an extraordinary chance to establish almost his own rule at the same degree. Do you think he is? Is there a risk of Magyar actually just, you know, sliding in the footsteps of Orbán and becoming quickly as autocratic as Orbán was? Or do you think he's actually also going to change something and reintroduce some of the checks and balances that Orbán had ejected from the system?
So I think that's sort of the $1 million or maybe $1 billion question. Mm-hmm. Hungary is a highly centralized political system with pretty much a kind of an exclusionary political power located to the government and the parliamentary majority that supports the government. And this is a huge majority now. So if Magyar wanted to misuse it in a democratic sense, in a liberal democratic mm-hmm. sense, he could do it. However, I believe his preference not to do it, it's going to be a sort of a delicate balance how and to what extent he and his party will try to transform it towards a more liberal democratic direction in which the government power is indeed limited and is exposed to the power of checks and balances. I think he has a clear preference to making the government more constrained institutionally than it has been in the past 16 years. I think they do believe that's the right direction to take. And the overwhelming majority, or at least the majority of their voters, expect them to do so, because he came to power on a ticket in which he was accusing the government of misusing its powers, both in terms of corruption and in terms of oversight. I mean, misusing government powers in terms of interfering into the private life of citizens, into the privacy of his own political party through the Secret Service, politically controlled by the government. So there are lots of reasons to change track, so to speak. However, he also wants to change the institution. And as we know from Poland, changing an autocratic institutional system towards a more democratic yeah. way sometimes occurs on a sort of semi-autocratic way. You don't always want to follow the most sophisticated and most liberal democratic strategy to do mm-hmm. that. Having the two-third is a better place now for Magyar, because now he can, with a couple of votes in parliament, they can actually transform the institutional system. But I still expect them to be cautious about that. They obviously will not give up their institutionalized powers in the first moment, because you know they have very important electoral pledges in terms of reclaiming some of the wealth that went to Fidesz cronies and conducting investigations on what happened with those wealth, what sort of misuse of power occurred in past years. So all those political promises which the public expects them to live up mm. to may require substantial government, actually do require substantial government powers to be used. And it's going to be a delicate issue how to navigate that sort of uncharted water. Yep. Having said that, I wouldn't underplay the risk of getting to be autocratic at some point mm-hmm. if the government becomes unpopular for any reason, for maybe for economic reasons, for instance. It's always sort of a last resource. You can want to use more power to balance your decreasing popularity. But of course, as any, you know, Hungarian liberal democrat, mm. I hope that is not going to be the case.
What would you say, if any, are the lessons that other democratic systems that are under threat of becoming autocratic or have become autocratic, what are the lessons they can learn from this election in Hungary?
Okay. Probably I should write a book on that, but I still attempt to answer the question. So in my view, this election, as the past 16 years as well, speaks for the danger of an exclusionary political institutional system, mm-hmm. first of all, exclusionary electoral system. Mm-hmm. So the very specificity of Hungary, if you compare it to other countries in the region or other countries in continental Europe, really, mm-hmm. is its extremely majoritarian mm-hmm. electoral system. It seems to be a mixed system. It is a mixed system nominally because there is party list, the national party list vote, and individual single mandate constituencies. But what really decides about the outcome of election are the single mandate constituencies. Mm-hmm. And now what happened is that TISA actually won 93 out of 106 single mandate constituencies mm-hmm. based on its 54% national vote. And that makes TISA super powerful in the parliament. And before this election, the same was true for Fidesz. Mm-hmm. So with a majority of around or slightly above, actually sometimes slightly below 50% of the national electorate, they were able to control 2/3 of the parliament. And with that 2/3, they could do anything. So it's very dangerous to operate such a majoritarian electoral system mm-hmm. in which relatively limited majorities are translated into supermajorities in terms of parliamentary ratios. This is an important lesson to bear in mind. And if TISA is skillful enough and thinking on the long term, I think they need to change this electoral system to protect Hungary from a reversal yet again towards the far right next time if they get unpopular and the far right or something to the right of TISA becomes more popular. And following up on that note, I would say that a more inclusionary way of conducting public discourse and politics in general mm-hmm. is super important. So you need to, this is a common sense, but still, I would say that you really need to listen to your electorate. Mm-hmm. You need to be prepared to discuss sensitive issues. And those issues might be difficult in terms of, you know, migration, in terms of equal rights for particular groups of society, particularly in a context of deteriorating economic conditions. And you know, your society, the majority of your society, or for a particular moment, the majority of your society might not be liberally minded. Mm-hmm. And we have to face that. But if we want to operate liberal democracy, we need to be able to listen to non-liberal voters as well. And we need to be able to protect liberal institutions with a substantial attention being paid for their views as well. Which is not to say that, you know, you should demolish the firewall. I think you need to make clear lines between liberal and illiberal, autocratic and democratic political forces. But, you know, democracy is a dangerous business. And it means that those who are not that much Democrats or not that much liberal have a say as well. And you need to take that into consideration. Yeah. But I do expect institutions, organizations, and, you know, social actors and individuals in general to act much more freely and much less being concerned mm-hmm. with the potential consequences of an oppressive government or anybody who exercises authority above them. So I do expect in that sense an overall liberation. Yeah. A sense of liberation within institutions, within organizations, within academia, within universities. Obviously, it needs to be taking place in a sort of an institutionalized context. Mm-hmm. Right? I do believe that those boards of foundations which are running universities in this country now, on behalf of a semi-authoritarian government, start losing the power, the overwhelming power over the universities mm-hmm. and the yoke, the submission that these academic communities have been experiencing in past years must go away. And I'm very much hopeful that it will be lessening and going away eventually. And I do hope that in that sense, a genuine liberalization will take place in this country, both in academia and in general in society.
That was Zoltán Adam speaking to me the day after Viktor Orbán's defeat. You can read Zoltán's piece The Morning After Orbán at blnreview.de. There you can also find our recent essays and back catalog of stories. If you're enjoying Airlift, please follow us wherever you listen and leave a review. Our audio producer is Caitlin Roberts. My name is Tobias Haberkorn, editor of Berlin Review. Thanks for listening.